Fasten your seatbelt and turn up the radio. We're going on a road trip. I'm Glenn Moberg, and today on Route 51, you will hear from the candidates for Wisconsin's sprawling 70th Assembly District, which stretches from Portage and Wood counties on the east all the way to Monroe County on the west. For 12 years, the 70th District has been represented by Amy Sue Vruwink, a Democrat from Millidore. But 4 years ago, in the redistricting map approved on a party-line vote by the Republicans in the legislature and approved by Governor Walker, the district's boundaries were radically changed, making Amy Sue Vruwink an endangered incumbent in this year's election, according to many political observers. Vruwink faces a challenge again this year from Nancy Vandermeer, a Toma businesswoman who operates an automobile dealership in that community and who is active in the Regional Chamber of Commerce and the National Rifle Association. Nancy Vandermeer was not able to be here in person for this program, but she recorded an interview with us this week. And after we hear that interview, we will be joined in our studio by Amy Sue Vruwink, who will take your questions live on the air in about a half hour. The phone number for that is 1-800-780-9742. That's 1-800-780-9742. If you want to get in line, or you can put a comment on our Route 51 Facebook page, and I'll read it live on the air. But first, let's hear this 24-minute interview with Nancy Vandermeer, Republican candidate for the 70th Assembly District.
Well, I live here in Toma, Wisconsin. I have been a business person here with my family for 38 years, and I'm married to David Hall for 22 years.
Any business organizations that you're involved with?
Yes, I'm in the Chamber Board of Directors, Toma Chamber, and that's one of the more significant ones. But through my whole experience, my professional experience, I've been on the Chamber Board of Directors. I've served on the Toma Memorial Hospital Board, the Handy Shop Industry Board, which is a sheltered workshop. Also, I was my church council president of a large congregation. And I also was involved with the pilot program for our local school-to-work program.
Tell us about the Vandermeer Motor Company.
Vandermeer Motor Company was started by my parents, and they had bought an existing GM dealership. And my parents, they had saved all their life to have a business. And they invested me as well in that, what I call an American dream. And I think that's one of the things that is so inspiring for me to be able to share with other people, is that that possibility that is out there. And my dad was a child of immigrants who came to the United States. And he, as I said, they had saved throughout their lives, came here and grew our business into a small town dealership. Eventually, during the bailouts, the auto task force, of course, parted ways with many dealerships across the United States, and we were one of them. And it was a very unfortunate circumstance because we had employees, we had a specified use facility, and we could have gone home or we could have decided to continue on. So I decided in 2010 that we would make a commitment to reinventing our automotive business. So I set about with my staff rebranding our business, developing a different business model because we would no longer be a new vehicle dealership. And it was something that had to take place immediately. So that change couldn't be thought about for months on end. We had to make decisions very quickly. We also had to explore shifting demographics in our business. And I can say after several years with our current business model, we are on the road to recovery and continue to be a significant small business in the community of Toma.
Did that experience, which was, what, just 4 years ago, did that motivate you in any way to run for the 70th Assembly seat?
Yes, it did. I love our area, and I love our small community. it's an honor to live in our area. And when what happened was the auto task force utilized the federal bankruptcy law in with the manufacturers to trump state franchise laws. And that was very compelling to me because I felt if this could happen to me, it could happen to other people. And I became very interested in how laws were crafted and how they protect people and all along that type of philosophy.
Now, the 70th Assembly District is long and stretched out. Why should voters in Wisconsin Rapids and Marshfield vote for somebody from Toma, and why should they even be lumped with voters who are all the way in Monroe County, which is not all that far from La Crosse?
Unfortunately, or otherwise, I did not have a say in the decision of how our district has been designed. I came to the plate, so to speak, in 2012. Unfortunately, as I said, this is our system, you know, that we are working with right now, or the design of our district that we're working with right now. I believe that the people in the 70th district, they are ready for change, and they need someone that has the skills, and as I usually say, who has had to live the comprehensive lesson in life to make those changes. When I've talked to people, whether it be in Wisconsin Rapids or near Stevens Point, like the town of Hull, they are looking for things that can change the economy in our district, create more good-paying jobs, and they have concerns about poverty. I hear the same concerns, whether it be in Sparta, Wisconsin, or Toma, Wisconsin. And I feel that that's why I'm well-suited to bring a fresh approach, as I said, those tried-and-true real-life skills to the 70th District.
You say you had nothing to do with drawing up the districts, and that's certainly true. There is a proposal right now to keep that from happening ever again by having an impartial judicial panel draw the districts so that voters would be choosing their politicians instead of politicians choosing the voters. Is that something you would consider?
I would be willing to look at it.
And some people have said that gerrymandered districts, because politicians have drawn them for themselves, that may be responsible for some of the extreme partisanship of today's politics, because elected officials in a safe Republican or a safe Democratic district only have to answer to members of their own party. Do you feel that the way the districts have been drawn have reinforced the partisanship? And if so, what could you do personally to change it? How could you reach across the aisle?
Personally, I feel that I'm very well suited to function in a bipartisan atmosphere. In my business, in my capacity in our community as a leader over the years, I've always had to be able to maintain and cultivate relationships. We have to respect our clients, for example. I have to respect those that I function on the various boards that I served on. And that's one of the ways that I feel I'm specifically suited to reach across the aisle, because I've had many years and experience of maintaining and working with good relationships, whether they be our clients, our at our business, whether it be our employees, or members of our community that we serve with.
Let's move on to some issues, Nancy Vandermeer. There's no issue more central to people's lives than jobs. Wisconsin's job growth has been anemic throughout the economic recovery, and Governor Scott Walker predicted that Act 10 and other reforms would unleash the creation of 250,000 jobs. He will be ending his first term far short of that goal. Why do you think Wisconsin's economy lags behind its Midwest neighbors? And what can the legislature do to improve it?
Well, in my capacity, from my perspective as a business person, what I would do is I would take a look at what we can do to attract small business to our district, making regulation less cumbersome. I realize we have to have regulation. That is important. But we also have an atmosphere in which business can practically function. Secondly, I think we need to focus on attracting businesses that employ less than 50 people. in the 70th district, I'm aware after visiting with businesses, they are less inclined due to the Affordable Health Care Act to employ more than 50 people because of the specific costs that could be involved in it as well. And then we have to look beyond just the walls of business to our infrastructure in our state and what we have available in the 70th district to attract business as far as the infrastructure goes as well.
But why do you think we're lagging behind other states? We were told by the governor that Act 10 and the other reforms would unleash this incredible creation of jobs, and it hasn't happened.
I believe, as I said, that what we can do is continue to try to create the atmosphere for small business, specifically in the 70th district. And, I will add that since 2011, there's been over 17,000 businesses that have been formed. And as I recall, there's over 104,000 new jobs that have been created as well.
But still far short of the 250,000. How do you feel about Act 10 and the restrictions that it put on public unions? And I'm going to ask you a philosophical question. Do you believe it's a fundamental human right to join a union and bargain collectively, whether in the public or private sector? Or is this, as some have said, a legislatively granted privilege that can be taken away?
I was not, as I said, part of the legislature for Act 10. And I feel that, of course, something had to be done as far as balancing the budget. I think this was a measure that came upon those employees involved rather quickly. It was a difficult and emotional situation for all of those involved.
But I ask you, is joining a union a fundamental human right, or is it something that the legislature can grant as a privilege?
I would prefer to study that a little bit more legally.
There's a new projection from a nonpartisan state agency that shows that the state right now has a budget shortfall of $1.8 billion through the year 2017. Do you believe that the tax cuts that were passed by the legislature last fall contributed to the deficit? And if so, what can Wisconsin do to address the shortfall?
If there is a deficit, I think we've got to look at every area of government. We need to evaluate whether or not the spending in those areas can be adjusted accordingly.
Do you think the tax cuts contributed to it? Were they a good thing or a bad thing?
I think the tax cuts were advantageous.
Let's move on to another issue that also affects the budget. Some estimates are that the governor's refusal to accept federal money from Obamacare for the Medicaid expansion has cost the state $119 million and forced 92,000 people off of Medicaid or Badger Care. The critics, of course, say that action was heartless and cruel. The governor says it's wrong for people to become dependent on the state, and there could even be future strings attached to that money. Do you believe Governor Walker should have accepted the federal Medicaid expansion money, or was he right to reject it?
Given the ebb and flow of the changes in the Affordable Health Care Act, I think we're headed in the right direction. All of the people in Wisconsin living in poverty right now have access to Badger Care. And those that live just above the poverty level have access to the subsidized insurance through the health care exchanges.
Well, you talk to some of those people and they say it's unaffordable and they would have preferred to be able to be on Medicaid. So you're saying that you think it was right for the governor not to accept that federal Medicaid money?
And given the fact of the growing deficit federally, was there an assurance, Glenn, that we would have gotten that money?
What should we do to guarantee medical care for the people who have been forced off of Badger Care and who find the Affordable Care Act exchanges too expensive for them?
I think that's an issue, if I was elected, I would like to be involved with, especially with, given my expertise or my experience, rather, on our hospital board locally.
Governor Walker has suggested drug testing people who get food stamps and unemployment compensation. Do you think that's a good idea? In Florida, it ended up costing more money to test people than they saved by finding people on drugs who were getting the state aid. What do you think of the governor's proposal?
I think that is something that we should look at. One of the features that I take a look at in my campaign is taking a look at the fraud or abuse in our system. And if those are indeed some of the features that are taking place with food stamps, et cetera, I think we need to examine that.
Are you in favor of the proposed Gagebic taconite iron mine in the Pinoki Hills south of Lake Superior? And how do you feel about the changes in state mining regulations that were passed in part to make it easier to locate a mine there and to locate other mines in other parts of Wisconsin?
Wisconsin has a long historied tradition of mining, and it's still a very important part of our state's economy. And don't forget, Glenn, the mine could create nearly 5,700 jobs in our state and have a $1.2 billion economic impact. The mining legislation was reasonable. And also, there's an updated permitting process that creates certainty for the applicant and also allows Wisconsin's environmental processes to take and be well-weighted in that process and standards. It also has no language that would reduce the air quality or the water quality standards.
That mine, as you know, has been strongly opposed by Wisconsin's Native American tribes, and particularly the Bad River Tribe, which fears the operation would pollute its wild rice fields. Do you think the state made an adequate effort to get the input of Native American tribes before going forward with the proposal? And more broadly, how can the state improve its relationship with the tribes, if you think that's important on environmental questions?
I think it's very important that we maintain that relationship with the tribes, and that we, have an ear to them and get their responses, their input.
Let's move to another mining issue. The natural gas extraction process of fracking has become controversial in some parts of the country, and it wouldn't be possible without the frack sand mining that occurs in Wisconsin. They've expanded exponentially in our state over the past few years. What kind of regulations and oversight do you think they need?
Right now, Glenn, you're probably aware that, of course, the sand mines have local control. In fact, I live probably about 2.5 miles from North America's largest sand mine or proposed sand mine. And I believe that the local governments should have a say in the siting of the mines. They should also be very involved in the health or safety of these mines. The mine that lives, or rather that is near where I live, also pays fees for roads. However, we do have a railroad siding nearby, and that's where most of the product is shipped.
So you believe that local municipalities and town governments have a right to control or restrict those operations if local homeowners don't want them there? Because that's been fought by the industry.
Yes, they do. And I know in our area it has worked out. It has worked out. And that's... I recommend to citizens, get involved very early with your town boards and become aware of what your sand mining, non-metallic mining regulations are in your township.
Citizen groups in central Wisconsin, some of them are fighting the CAFOs or mega dairy farms, and they want limits put on high-capacity wells because they worry about groundwater. In the Central Sands region of Wood and Adam counties, lakes and streams are drying up. Do you think the DNR should be tougher in regulating high-capacity wells? And as a person who lives on a dairy farm, aren't you worried that this could put dairy farmers out of business?
There are strict manure handling regulations, for example, right now, when we talk about groundwater contamination. Obviously, the DNR is part of that discussion, part of the input in how those regulations are created. And, of course, we always want to maintain the health and the safety, security, availability of water for our citizens in our district and throughout the state of Wisconsin.
So you think there's a balancing act that needs to be done, or should there be limits on, should the DNR be able to enforce strict limits on high-capacity wells?
I think there has to be a balancing act.
Let's move to education. School vouchers allow parents to place their kids in private schools with state-funded scholarships. It's a system intended to increase parent choice and introduce competition in the education system. Public school advocates claim that vouchers can destroy the public school system. Where do you come down on the issue of school vouchers? Should we be expanding them? Should we be restricting them? Or is it right just about where it's at right now?
You know, Glenn, first of all, I think it's very important to point out that not all the districts in our state are the same. I believe that the schools in our district aren't failing the kids. So the vouchers are not as necessary as they may be in other parts of the state. For example, like the inner city schools where some of those schools may be failing. I'm okay with the current program. I just would make sure that it does not negatively impact our schools. I think it's important to give kids options, though.
Wisconsin schools have adopted Common Core state standards. That's a system of benchmarks intended to ensure that all students are meeting the same standards in schools. On the whole, do you think Common Core is a good thing or a bad thing for schools in Wisconsin?
I think standards are good. However, the state, I believe, should work on developing their own standards. And our local school boards should have the final say when it comes to what's actually going to be taught in their schools.
You're a member of the National Rifle Association, Nancy Vandermeer. How important are gun rights to you, and are there any areas at all where the government has a duty to impose and enforce regulations on things like assault weapons, the size of magazine clips, regulating gun show sales, or taking tougher measures to keep guns out of the hands of criminals or mentally unstable people?
I would say at this point no, but I would like to examine it a little bit more in detail. I think that's a very large question with a number of qualifiers in it.
Fair enough. And let's move to a social issue that divides a lot of people. This past week, Planned Parenthood of Wisconsin closed its fifth Family Planning Health Center. This was in Fond du Lac County after they closed centers in Beaver Dam, Shawano, Johnson Creek, and Chippewa Falls. In a press release just this week, the organization said it was a direct consequence of Governor Walker's targeted elimination of all state funds supporting preventive patient care at Planned Parenthood in the state budget. Would you try to restore that funding if elected, or do you think the governor was right to remove it?
I would like to take a little bit closer examination of that right now.
On a broader question, the Supreme Court, as you know, has ruled that women do have the constitutional right to seek abortions. Do you think it's appropriate for the state to impose restrictions on that right if those restrictions lead to the closing of clinics?
Yes.
You do feel it's the state has the right to do that even if it leads to the closing of clinics?
Yes.
Why?
I'm a pro-life candidate, and I feel that is part of what being a pro-life candidate stands for.
How do you react when people say that when you do that, you're imposing your personal religious values on other people in the state? Do you think that's a fair criticism?
Not necessarily.
And why not?
Because I believe that life begins at conception. And life begins at conception. I'm not qualifying it with a religious perspective.
Very good. If you're elected, what would be your top priorities for the 70th District and for the state in general?
I would say, Glenn, jobs and economy. That is important. If we get our district going, we all win. And that is so important.
And one final question. When you make decisions in Madison, are you going to be more concerned about how those decisions affect the taxpayers of Wisconsin or about how those decisions affect people who may be too poor to pay taxes, people who depend on unemployment compensation, food stamps, Badger Care, the elderly, the poor?
Glenn, I would be looking at how it affects the taxpayers. But I would like to say this. When legislation would come across my desk, I would look at the legislation. Is it affordable? Is it sustainable? And is this something that we should be enacting on behalf of the good people in Wisconsin?
Nancy Vandermeer, thank you so much. I really appreciate you taking the time.
Thank you, Glenn.
That's 70th Assembly District candidate Nancy Vandermeer. She's a Republican businesswoman from Toma running against Amy Sue Vruwink of Millidor, the Democrat in the race who has represented the 70th District for 12 years. Amy Sue is here live in our studio, and she will be joining you in just a minute. And if you would like to ask her a question live on the air, the number is 1-800-780-9742. That's 1-800-780-9742. I'm Glenn Moberg. This is Route 51 Regional Talk Radio.
WPR is committed to unbiased journalism, interesting stories, and smart entertainment. Member support is the single biggest piece of our funding. It makes all the programs you enjoy on Wisconsin Public Radio possible. Thank you to our members. Support also comes from Wausau's Woods and Art Museum, featuring the all-new Birds in Art, now through November 16th, along with Legacy, Lost and Saved, a tribute to extinct and endangered birds, including the passenger pigeon, lywam.org.
I'm Glenn Moberg. This is Route 51 Regional Talk Radio. We are looking at the candidates for the 70th Assembly District on this day's show. You just listened to Republican Nancy Vandermeer in a pre-recorded interview. Her Democratic opponent, 12-year incumbent Amy Sue Vruwink, is with us live in the studio. If you would like to comment on what you just heard from Nancy Vandermeer, or if you've got a question for Amy Sue Vruwink, that number again is 1-800-780-9742, 1-800-780-9742, or you can put a comment on the Route 51 Facebook page, and I'll read it live on the air. Amy Sue Vruwink, you have represented the 70th District for 12 years. Why do you think you deserve another term?
Well, Glenn, there's a lot of work to be done in the state of Wisconsin. And when I look at the state assembly in my district and what things that we can be doing, there's a lot of opportunity for more work to be coming together with both sides of the party spectrum and getting the work done for Wisconsin. As my dad always said, you can accomplish more when you're working together as opposed to when you were pulling apart.
Your general reaction to what you just heard from your Republican opponent, Nancy Vandermeer?
I mean, the difference, the stark difference between her and I is that I am doing the things that she's going to look at or look into. And as a legislator, as an incumbent, as a member of Joint Finance Committee, that I have an opportunity and I have been bringing the rural voice of central Wisconsin and now western Wisconsin with a redistricting to Madison. And I am respected by both sides of the aisle, even Governor Walker, to talk about these ag issues that are important to rural Wisconsin. And we have a lot of issues that that my opponent, unfortunately, I wish she could have been here today because I would have liked to have some dialogue, and I think it's important for people who are going to the polls this November to actually meet the candidates, talk to them, have an opportunity to listen to what their opinions are. And so there are some questions that I would have liked. I mean, she talks about jobs and the economy, and that's a nice 30-second soundbite. Jobs and the economy is very important to our state. But what goes behind that? The infrastructure, the school system, our technical colleges, higher education, military, careers. There's so much that goes into doing this. And the 30-second soundbite and looking, these are things that I'm already doing.
Have there been any debates between the two of you?
Actually, no. There was one supposed to be scheduled for in Toma for the Rotary and Chamber, and unfortunately, I gave her a couple dates. They wanted to do next week the 7th, which is now people understanding that Joint Finance is meeting to take up about $460,000 for voter education, and I said I couldn't make that date, so I gave her a couple other dates the following week, and she they said, nope, we won't be doing them. So unfortunately, voters don't have an opportunity to see both of us together and to ask us, but I'm hoping that she will participate in Wood County's League of Women Voters coming up on the 20th of October.
We talked about changes that were made to the boundaries of the 70th Assembly District, and even the 7th and 3rd Congressional Districts were affected. Following that redistricting map that was put into effect by Governor Walker and the Republicans in the State Assembly and State Senate, do you think it was right that such radical changes were made in the boundaries by the Republican Party?
Absolutely not. Redistricting has always been about starting from local units of government and going its working way up. So you have your local units, your county government, then state government, federal government. This time it was top-down heavy. It was congressional members are figuring out the best numbers, putting the numbers in the computers and saying, how am I going to be a safe incumbent and how don't I have to work to serve the people? How am I going to pick the people? Unfortunately, that's not how we're supposed to be doing it.
How did that affect you personally in terms of the areas you used to represent that are no longer part of the district?
Well, I used to have a district that was over an hour by an hour, and now my district is over 2 hours from top to bottom. But now instead of having two counties and a little bit Marathon County, sorry, now I've got Monroe County and I've got Jackson County. And I was just at a debate the other day, or not really a debate, it was called our Cracker Barrel down in Sparta, the Chamber of Commerce. And a gentleman keeps coming, he goes, I'm going to continue to bring it up, he said, because people forget about this redistricting. And he said, as a resident here in Monroe County, he's like, Amy Sue, I feel like you're so far away. And the same can be said for somebody that lives in around the town of Hall, Eau Plaine, Carson, and can say, you know something, Sparta is so far away, Amy Sue. And so I have made it a priority during my legislative session to make sure that I was getting down to my counties, both in Monroe and Jackson counties, to make sure that I was available for my constituents, holding regular office hours down there, going to events down there, so people knew that I was accessible, that they could come up to me and talk to me, but also just doing constituent services. And so
Amy Sue Vruwink, they cut a lot of parts of that district out where people knew you very well. They cut your high school out of the district.
Yes, they did. They cut Auburndale High School, in elementary school, the Auburndale School District. I live in the Auburndale School District. My daughter is a first grader at Auburndale Elementary School, and they did. They cut it out. When I ran for office, I ran because I wanted to represent the people of central Wisconsin, and now I have the pleasure of representing western Wisconsin, but it was came down to politics. They wanted to carve the district where my family couldn't vote for me anymore, friends couldn't vote for anymore, and the people that knew how I legislate and knew my style, they said, nope, we're going to throw her in a total different I'm part of a total different congressional district now, so it was purely partisan politics.
Do you think an impartial judicial panel should be drawing those boundaries?
Without question, absolutely.
Okay, you were in the Assembly for a number of years. When Democrats controlled both houses of the legislature, you had a Democratic governor, Jim Doyle, in the governor's mansion. Your party could have done redistricting reform at that time, and you didn't do it. Why?
Well, I tried in my own caucus, and also Spencer Black was a proponent of this, Representative Spencer Black, of redistricting and saying, you know something, this has gone too far enough. But unfortunately, we couldn't get all of our members to rubber stamp the proposal. But I was in favor of that because I do believe that people should be choosing who their elected officials are and not politicians choosing the people.
Do you think those gerrymandered districts have increased the partisanship? Because if you're from a safe Democrat district, you only have to talk to Democrats. If you're from a safe Republican district, you only have to talk to Republicans.
Absolutely, and that's what directly contributes to the partisanship in Madison. When you have Republicans, Democrats who come from very safe seats, there's no compromising, there's no looking at the other person and saying, you know, that's a good idea, I didn't look at that. It's my way or the highway, unfortunately. And so that has contributed to the partisanship in Madison, and people don't want to work together. But if you come from a district like mine, who you can flip a coin and it can go either way, you have to be listening to both sides. You have to be talking to people that you may disagree with on issues with, because that's my job.
If you just joined us, we're talking to Amy Sue Vruwink, Democratic incumbent in the 70th Assembly District. We heard from Nancy Vandermeer in a pre-recorded interview in the first half of the show. If you've got a question for Amy Sue Vruwink, 1-800-780-9742, 1-800-780-9742. You can also use that number if you want to react to what you heard from Nancy Vandermeer during the first half of the program. Amy Sue Vruwink, there's no issue more central to people's lives than jobs. Job growth has been anemic. The governor predicted that Act 10 and the other reforms would unleash the creation of 250,000 jobs. We are far short of that goal. Why do you think our economy lags behind its Midwest neighbors, and what can you and the legislature do to improve it?
Well, first of all, who wants to come to a community or a state that's fighting amongst itself? That doesn't make us very attractive on the national level. And during Act 10, that could have been handled very differently. Governor Walker, the public workers, public sector workers had come together. They had offered to give up things, to negotiate, to sit down and said, you know something, this is something that was important. I mean, one of the things that I looked at that I focused on was worker safety and their work at safe environments. And I had a number of amendments for our prison systems to making sure that those who are working in them, who are correction officers, had the safety. And that was absolutely every amendment that I had for every correctional facility was tabled. So it showed you that there was no willing to compromise. But as a leader in Madison, I like to bring people together. My voting record shows that I vote for 79% with the Republicans because it's good for my district. It may not be great for my party. My party might not like it, but I don't represent my party when I go to Madison. I represent the people of the 70th. And in the jobs, I mean, when we look at, we see this fighting going on. We see that people aren't coming together. They don't want to work together. But also the divestment of our technical colleges, cutting $70 million in our technical college budget, cutting K through 12 schools. I mean, that was something that Wisconsin has been known for across the country, is our wonderful education, public education systems, and what they have done and how well they have worked together. But the opportunity to, you know, we're trying to now say, well, we're working on this program or that program. The bottom line is that when we stop investing in our state and investing in our resources, such as our children, our children's public education, and giving away tax breaks to people that are unaccountable, that's where the real problem is. And that's why our state, we can't, there's no demand. People don't have the money in their pockets to be able to go out to dinner or go to buy a car or what have you. They don't have that expendable income. And so when you're doing that, when people have expendable income and they have a little extra money in their pocket, yeah, we can go out to eat or we can go watch a movie. And then it's creating a demand for the other small businesses in our community.
Let me ask you the same philosophical question I asked her. Do you believe it's a fundamental human right to join a union and bargain collectively, whether it's in the public or private sector, or is it a legislatively granted privilege that can be taken away?
Unions were created to help workers, to bring them together so people didn't take advantage of them. And when you bring people together and so that they can bargain, you know, there is a lot of bargaining that's gone on over the years in the public school systems. Teachers have given up their opportunities for pay increases. Instead, they took better insurance packages. And I think that is right. I think you should be able to come together and to be able to sit down across from one another and to talk about it and to negotiate. I mean, and anybody who is in business, you do negotiating. You try to work on what is going to be the best outcome for both of you. And so that is really, I think that having the right to bargain and the right to come together is absolutely a right that people should have, and we shouldn't be taking away people's rights.
1-800-780-9742, 1-800-780-9742. If you'd like to talk to Amy Sue Vruwink, let's go to Jeff in Chile. Jeff, you're on Route 51.
Hello. Hi, Amy Sue. I don't know if you remember me, but we talked at length at the Energy Fair. You visited my station where I was running my truck on moonshine.
Yes, I do. That was quite the presentation you had there, Jeff. That was interesting.
I would like you to call me. I would like to continue that conversation because I'm in the process of trying to start a biofuel program in the Amish community around me here.
Great.
And I believe that there are a vast number of jobs that could be created in Wisconsin if we just start making our own fuel instead of importing it.
Jeff, we'll take that as your question. Thanks so much. Biofuels as a source of jobs in Wisconsin.
Absolutely. I mean, that is, Jeff, I really appreciated the time that he took to call in, but also that he was there and he was demonstrating about entrepreneurs and how we can think outside the box. And Wisconsin has done a really poor job of cultivating entrepreneurs in the last couple of years. I had a bill up. It was it's CDFIs. Those are community development financial institutions, which serve primarily underserved areas of the state of Wisconsin. In 2012, they created over 10,000 jobs. And these are places where people can go where a traditional maybe bank or credit union can't help, that they can go to CDFIs. And my bill would just say, you know, this is a good opportunity that we should be able to help ask more people who want to invest in this and invest in entrepreneurs. But biofuels is a way for rural Wisconsin to be able to contribute to the economy even more. I mean, right now, agriculture is an $88.3 billion a year industry for the state of Wisconsin. One in over nine jobs are contributed to agriculture. And when we have entrepreneurs such as Jeff who are looking for alternative ways, we should be investing in them and helping them grow their business.
Should the governor have accepted the Medicaid expansion money?
The Medicaid expansion money is very important. I just sat down with a number of doctors, one from a doctor in Toma, a doctor up in Marshfield, and they're looking at the people that are really struggling, that we should be taking it. I mean, if you look at Chris Christie, who was just here campaigning for the governor, he took the federal money. I mean, we have a moral obligation to take care of our citizens, to make sure they're not using emergency rooms to get their checkups and to go for things that we could be preventing, and having those annual checkups under Badger Care is a wonderful opportunity to do that, but it also reduces costs to taxpayers.
What are you going to do for the 92,000 people who've been kicked off Badger Care?
This is something that the priority needs to be that when we are looking at what are our priorities in our budget and what can we be doing. I mean, as any family, as we look down, my husband and I look at our budget and we're talking about, you know, health care. It's important, especially for children and families with children. They've shown time and time again that, you know, when children are, if people are taking their kids, they're going to be more healthy. They're getting the regular checkups. We can do a lot of preventative care this way. But I mean, the cost, what they're projecting now, is going to cost us over $1 billion from now until 2021. The cost is going to be, and right now that it could be over $500 million savings for the state of Wisconsin if we were to take this Medicaid money and to cover more people instead of shoving them off and saying you're on your own. And I find it interesting. My opponent talks about, you know, about the Affordable Care Act. And, you know, if you're just above that poverty line, then you can sign up for the exchanges. But the next breath she takes and talks about, no, this is wrong. This is costing us jobs and so on and so forth. And I've talked to a number of people who are small businesses who have now signed up on the exchanges and for the first time actually have it. I have a small business owner in Wood County has had this business for a long time. He said, I'm saving $500 a month, Amy Sue, on my health care costs. And he said, and now I can actually go and have preventative care.
Democratic incumbent Amy Sue Vruwink, candidate for re-election in the 70th Assembly District. We heard from her Republican opponent, Nancy Vandermeer, in the first half of the program. 1-800-780-9742 if you'd like to join the conversation. 1-800-780-9742. Let's go to Catherine in Lac des Flambeaux. Catherine, you're on Route 51.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call. I'm had a whole lot of things that came up during the discussions of voting redistricting. The Republicans present that as being a successful, even Steven thing, and we all know that that's a lie, and I think the figures that they in general present are all twisted. As far as the Wisconsin environmental processes, they're all compromised. The Bad River was previously polluted by the paper mills, and now with the mining, they are very concerned about their water. And I don't think the tradition of mining holds water. Lots of traditions have been historically bad, as we all know. And it dawns on me that there are a lot of reservations that are affected, their water being affected by what is called progress. The Fort Berthold Reservation had a major spill with the saline from the fracking.
All right, Catherine, we got it. I want to give Amy Sue Vruwink a chance to respond. Amy Sue, are you in favor of the proposed Gagebic taconite iron mine in the Pinoki Hills? And how do you feel about the changes in the state mining regulations that were passed in part to make it easier to locate a mine there?
Again, Glenn, this is where the partisanship really came out. I had my own amendment to say that it was a Wisconsin Workers Amendment is what my amendment was. And all I asked is my colleagues on the other side of the aisle, I said, if this is really about jobs and this mining is about jobs, and yes, mining is a strong part of Wisconsin's heritage and where we came from, but if this is really where it's at, then my amendment said that we would let technical colleges go, that we put it on the Wisconsin Jobs Net for these opportunities. The fear was is that some of the mines in Michigan and Minnesota were closing down. And my fear was that if we're going to employ Wisconsin people, that it should be Wisconsin jobs first. And what it should be having is that actually people are getting notified that there's these opportunities. It was tabled. It was killed on a party line vote. And so I knew that this the mining up in the Pinoki Hills was not about creating jobs. It was about reducing our regulation. I mean, the regulation that is proposed in this, and then when a mining company writes their own legislation, it's helpful for them to reduce the regulation they're going to have. Our regulation was going to be less than Minnesota and less than Michigan. And so we compare that, and it's like, you know something, if it's going to be fair, let's be fair across the board. If this isn't, you know, if we're not harming the environment, then we should make sure that our standards are still up there and we still have a gold seal.
Let's address Catherine's central concern. How can the state improve its relationship with the tribes, particularly on these environmental questions? And was there adequate input from the Bad River Tribe and other tribes when the legislation legislation was being drawn up.
No, that was one of the criticisms that they had a hearing, I believe, up in Hurley, and there was a number of elected leaders from the tribe that were there, and that they were put at the bottom of the list. And when somebody's resources, such as water, is directly affected, and you are elected leader, you should have the courtesy of being addressed as elected leader to represent the people of your community. And they weren't. And I think that we could have had better opportunity to sit down, especially with the Bad River, and talk about this. And one of the things that I'm working with, just last week I sat down and I met with, on my request, I asked the Ho-Chunk to sit down and talk with me, because Ho-Chunk is in Toma and Nakusa area, and they have land all over the state of Wisconsin. But I said, in order to improve state-tribal relations, I would really like to sit down with the leaders. And so we got to talk one-on-one, that we just sat down informally, and we're talking about the issues that were important to them. And resources, especially water, with our public trust doctrine, and making sure that our water is we have pure water, we have good water, that we have these resources available for everyone.
All right, we got to go into a lightning round series here, okay. Amy Sue Bruink. We've got 5 minutes left.
All right.
So I'm going to bring up some of the same questions I asked Nancy Vandermeer. The natural gas extraction process of fracking, we have frack sand mines that are opposed by local communities. We also have citizens groups and some towns fighting CAFOs or mega dairy farms, particularly because of the issue of high capacity wells, which also affect the frack sand mining. How do you balance private property rights of the mine owners and the dairy farms with the concerns of local citizens regarding their groundwater, and how much control should they have over these operations?
You know, we need to look at protecting our resources that we have, but we also have to make sure that we're protecting the sustainability of the resources both that industry needs and people need. And when we can come together and have common sense regulation on this, that's what is key and it's important. I did a survey in my district, and there's a number of hot button issues that I put out to the people in my district, hoping that they'll send the response back. And when I asked about the fracking and about, you know, sand mines and this, and what their question was, is that, okay, Amy, so we like our local control, number one. But number two, my question was like, would you prefer to have the state dictate to you, or do you want local control? And overwhelmingly, people came back and said, we like our local control. We like the hours of operation we set in, and we don't want to lose our local control. And some proposed legislation was to take away the local control.
That's a conservative political position, isn't it, that you should have control at the local level instead of the state or federal level?
Well, Glenn, that used to be a conservative point of view, but not any longer. It's now that we are usurping, the legislature is usurping a lot of local control and a lot of rights.
School vouchers, where do you stand on them?
They're costing us a lot of money. I mean, I believe around like $30 million per year and $60 million over the biennium. When you have families that can afford to send their children to schools and then they get the tax deduction at the end of their taxes, I think that that's the wrong direction. I don't think we should be funding two parallel school systems. We have a constitutional obligation that we provide our public education. We have great schools in the state of Wisconsin.
And let's talk about abortion clinics, family planning clinics closing down across the state, in part because money's been taken away from Planned Parenthood. Would you restore that money? And the greater issue of the constitutional right to have an abortion, and whether or not the state should be imposing restrictions that closes clinics.
This is a federal issue. Abortion rights is a federal issue that back when President Bush had control of both Senate and the Congress, that they failed to act on this. And it's because it's a political issue. People can fundraise off of this issue, and it's an emotional issue. But when it comes to women's health care and making sure that women, especially now that we've kicked a number of people off of Badger Care, that the access they have with some of these local Planned Parenthood clinics, it's not just for abortion. It's preventing breast cancer. It's also doing cervical screenings. It's doing a lot of preventative care that a lot of women cannot afford and cannot have access to. And especially in rural areas, that's an issue that's real and near and dear to a lot of people's hearts.
How important are gun rights to you? Are there any areas at all where the government has the duty to impose and enforce regulations, assault weapons the size of magazine clips, regulating gun show sales, taking tougher measures to keep guns out of the hands of criminals or mentally unstable people?
As I have an A rating with the NRA, you could look at my rating. I don't run from that. I'm actually pretty proud of it. I was born and raised on a dairy farm where we took our hunting very seriously, and it's a part of our heritage. We do have to have a responsibility, though, to make sure that we are protecting our citizens and looking out for them, but not taking away our Second Amendment rights, that law-abiding citizens should have the right to carry and to have their guns. But I don't believe that we need overburden some regulation, but we do need to take care of the citizens that do have mental health issues, that that we need to be taking a look at that and making sure that we're delving into it and not just making this an issue that you can or cannot have guns.
When you make decisions in Madison, this is my final question, how much concern do you have for the taxpayers of Wisconsin, and how much concern do you have about how your decisions affect those who may be too poor to pay taxes, people who depend on unemployment compensation, food stamps, and Badger Care, the poor, the elderly?
Those are the most vulnerable people of our society. And as a lawmaker, I have a moral obligation to be looking at how my legislation affects people, but also not only their personal health, but their pocketbooks. And so when I'm looking at doing my job as a state representative, I have to look at the greatest good for the greatest amount of people. And I do believe that we do have an obligation of making sure that people are provided for, not a handout, but a helping hand. When some people fall in tough times, lose their jobs, we should be able, as a state government, we should be able to give people a helping hand, but not a handout.
Amy Sue Vruwink, thanks so much for spending half of this program with us. It's gone very quickly.
Well, I appreciate the opportunity to talk to the voters out there and directly talk to them and address their concerns. So I appreciate the opportunity to be here today, Glenn. Thank you.
We want to thank today's guests, the candidates for Wisconsin's 70th Assembly District, incumbent Democrat Amy Sue Vruwink and Republican Nancy Vandermeer. I'm Glenn Moberg. Thanks to our executive producer, Rick Ryer, our on-air producer, Jane Ritger. Thanks to John Altenberg for the Route 51 theme. Next Thursday on Route 51, we look at the challenges faced by our rural communities and Wisconsin's farm economy and possible solutions. Remember to follow us on Facebook. If you missed part of the show, you can hear it again in its entirety Friday night at 7 on WHRM 90.9 FM Wausau. Don't forget to vote Tuesday, November 4th. Thanks for riding along with us today. Forward, as we say in Wisconsin. Until next week, we're heading out of town.